You seen this?
What?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is ASL interpreter Claire Alexander. We talk about being a chameleon atheist and having to blend in on the job.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello.
And Molly Glover.
Hi.
And we have a guest today. With us recording is Claire Alexander.
Hello.
And Claire, you're an ASL interpreter.
I'm a sign language interpreter, yes.
And so sometimes in like a medical context, but you know, often like a personal context, just for everything.
And comedic, yeah. She does the...
And for comedy.
Yeah, we got to know Claire because she did interprets vilification tennis at Convergence.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes at Renaissance Festival.
And other panels at Convergence.
Minnesota Fringe Festival at Convergence. Yeah. So people know me in the community, especially the geek community, because of kind of the very outfacing stuff I do, performances, theater, all that kind of wacky stuff. But my bread and butter is actually like very sensitive interpreting. I do chemical dependency, mental health, deaf blind, college, all that kind of like sticky stuff. Emergency on-call for several years, phone calls for several years for the video relay. So that's what I do.
You were saying that with that, because you are translating so much for so many people, that... you kind of have to be adaptable. Like, though you might be a non-believer, you're very flexible about how you present that with people.
Yeah. I'm actually very mindful about how I walk into a situation. Because I'm a freelancer, I'm frequently working with people I don't have a background with, or I have to walk into a very intense situation and make a relationship with them really fast. So it's really important that I kind of present as neutral. So when I walk in, it's not about me, it's about, you trust me enough to interpret your divorce, you trust me enough to interpret because you just got shot by a gun, and that's more important than our politics? Great, let's go. So,
sure.
And it's interesting, I also mentor new interpreters, and I talk to them about, like, what kind of interpreting do you want to do? And they say, oh, I want to do this, or I want to do that. And I'm like, that's nice. And whenever they say, I don't want to swear, and I don't want to do religion, and I'm like, you should pick a different field. Because no matter what domain you go into, God's going to come up, and people are going to swear. So just get used to it. So I don't do religious interpreting, quote unquote. I don't do services.
But it comes up.
But it comes up constantly.
If you got asked to do one, would you do it?
Typically, no.
Okay.
This will get into linguistics, which I'm also geeky about. But my policy is, what's the purpose? So if the purpose is to try to help somebody, like, with self-improvement or sobriety or coping with an illness, I feel like I can do all of those things authentically. If something is just a religious service, like a Christmas or an Easter, the really overarching goal of that is, like, worship or praise, and then I'm faking it. Then it's not authentic. So I have done... exceptional things, like I've done like funeral services, because in that case I think the real point of the service is like closure or grief.
It's for grief.
And then I'm like, I support that purpose. I can do that authentically.
Sure. Like
I don't
a
care.
Wedding.
I don't care what it looks like superficially. This is the purpose.
Everyone grieves regardless of whether or not you're religious or are religious. The same can't be said about attending a religious service.
Except for like sociopaths, they don't grieve. They don't feel anything.
Yeah. It sounds like you're speaking from personal experience.
Maybe. I don't know how I feel about that. Anyway,
you don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything at all.
That's an easy gig, man. You show up and they're like, what do you want? I don't know. Just flap your hands. It's pretty.
Yeah.
mouth breathe. Okay.
So empty inside. does your translating have to be pretty literal? Like, as far as like getting the, is it accuracy over meaning? Because I know some things. Am I right in understanding that some things don't have direct translation?
Sometimes. So there's two parts to that. The first part is sometimes people want more like beautiful, pure ASL, which is really its own language. And then they really want like signed English. Like, I can't hear the English, but if you can just give me the English, I will figure out how I want it to mean. Okay. And then there's other times when, especially in like high emotional situations, what a person is saying communicates a lot less than how they're saying it. So if somebody is like in the hospital in the emergency room and they're screaming because they're in pain, mm-hmm. the doctor needs to know that their pain level's at a 10. They don't really need to know which swear words they said, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
you know, this is the gist of what he said.
Do you feel, I mean, is it, so since he can't, since, I mean, since he, their, your patient really can't, or client, I guess, really can't know what, I mean, really can't know what you're saying, even, I mean, unless they lip read and you happen to be facing them and, like, you know, whatever. But because at least in some languages, when it's interpreting, you might be able to pick up a word or two. You know, like if I'm interpreting for someone Spanish to English, they may know a few English words and know that I'm not saying the right thing. Is, do you feel like there's more of a trust because of that? Because they, I mean, there's, they don't, they can't hear at all what you're...
Sometimes. I mean, it depends. Like, yeah. so just like you have... no way of knowing how much somebody who, say, is a Spanish speaker still understands and passes and understands English, mm-hmm. just like with the deaf person. Deaf is not like an on-off switch. People right. have degrees of hearing. They'll have degrees of capacity with lip reading. They'll have degrees of fluency in English.
Sure.
You meet a deaf kid, you know, 10 or younger, you're going to kind of frequently encounter them being pretty freaking bilingual, especially
yeah.
if they grew up on their iPhones texting.
Oh, yeah,
sure. As opposed to adults, you might meet an adult that has fourth grade reading level, or I know adults that are deaf and blind and kick my butt when it comes to English fluency. Mm-hmm. They correct my grammar.
My ASL professor, she was very bad at writing down English sentences, mm-hmm. because it just, she didn't understand the, she wrote down the words, but the grammar was never right.
Right.
Because she didn't learn grammar.
Yeah.
She went to you know, a deaf college and pretty much right away was, and so she would write things down like, paper needs work, don't be that. And it's like, all right.
Yeah, it's a spectrum. I will say there's a lot less accountability from people in the environment. Like, mm-hmm. I don't assume that somebody in any given waiting room or any given setting won't know some Spanish.
Right.
I usually don't assume that people around me know sign language unless the people that I'm interacting with are the deaf people, so...
That's a fair point, yeah.
There's a lot less, like, oversight to mm-hmm. if the person really can't access the other side of the language, like, how good of a job are you doing? So that's... That yeah. requires more trust.
Yeah. Interesting.
So the chameleon aspect of this is... Can you give us an example of when you might, like, you know, it doesn't have to be specific to a person, but, like, where you need to be flexible in how you... represent yourself or kind of agree with the ideals or beliefs that they're saying as they go?
Yeah, so one of the things, how do I say this? It's not exclusive to religion or my religious beliefs. Like, when I walk into an appointment or when I walk into a job, I want to be as approachable and as able to develop a quick rapport with somebody as possible. So it's about... my religious beliefs. It's also about not being standoffish. It's about being approachable and friendly and welcoming and have the ability to let them develop trust with me pretty quickly, because it's not about me. It's really, right. it's what do you need out of this interaction? You need to get this doctor to pay attention to your pain. You need to communicate your needs. You need to learn. So I might have some idea about what I think is beautiful ASL or beautiful English, but I don't really care, because you need to be effective in your education and you have a right for this class that you paid for to get the most out of it. So mm-hmm. Kind of in every aspect, when I walk into a job and I don't know that person, it's like, what can I do to make you feel comfortable to trust me? Because you don't have access to this source and you're here for a reason and you need access to this source and you want to believe that I'm not going to be like, I'm going to put my Jesus spin on it for you. I'm going to put my feminist agenda spin
right.
on it for you, because mm-hmm. I feel like it's good for you. Like, if they don't trust me to just give it to them as honestly as possible, that's not me doing my job and that's not fair. So, I've walked into college classes and had students that... really needed me to appreciate how much they actually could hear and not be judgmental about, well, I should give you pure ASL because you're really culturally deaf. And they're like, that's nice, but I need to pass this class and I need to understand what that English teacher is saying grammatically, or I need to understand mm-hmm. these chemical equations, so it actually works better for me if you give me more English.
Right.
Or I need to walk into a doctor's appointment and be like, I need to really own the fact that I need you to understand how illiterate I am, so I don't know the name of this medication, but I really do understand my diabetes on a really deep level, and mm-hmm. I can explain it, and I'm eloquent. So it's a lot of different stuff. I walk into welfare offices and I want people to feel like I'm not going to judge them if they're talking very candidly about their sexual history or their income or their circumstances. It's like, I'm just here to make your day work.
Is that something that, is that just a balance you kind of figure out and test out with each person as you go?
Yeah.
It's like a, you figure out where they're comfortable and meet them at that level?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. It's a balancing act because I want to be approachable. So whatever they need from me, I want to be that, but I also don't want to lie and pretend to be something I'm not. So frequently it's, you also tend to talk to people at the beginning of an appointment because you really want them to feel like they can trust you. And they're also kind of sussing out if you're, you know, a crappy interpreter or not. It's like, I'm going to talk to you. And if you can't understand this, you're really not going to do it again once I actually need you to interpret well for me. So you do kind of engage in this small talk frequently before a job starts, but you have to walk this line between, like, I'm going to demonstrate that I'm fluent and my eyes work and I've got good language and I'm ethical, but I'm also not going to bullshit you and pretend that I'm super Christian when I'm not. So, but it's weird. I've got all these people out in the community, and I'm not really talking about deaf people anymore because they're actually more savvy about the game interpreters play.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, the hearing people I interact with, the hearing doctors, the hearing teachers, the hearing students. They really kind of buy it hook, line, and sinker. And I'm not trying to, but because I walk in so many different spheres, like, I can bullshit with the best of them that I'm a Christian, because not because I am a Christian or I want to pass, but because when they drop words like scriptures and psalms and blah blah blah, mm-hmm. oh you know Jeremiah, Jeremiah, it's like I know that context because I need to for work.
Sure.
But there's this, like, false sense of, like, well, if you know the context, you must be a member of that community. And I'm like, actually I'm not, but it doesn't really matter that you make that assumption, so I'm not going to correct you,
right?
Because that hurts my rapport.
It's like code switching. You're using their words, so they assume you're a part of their culture.
And it happens in lots of other communities. It happens with Christians. I mean, it happens with a lot of queer communities. I kind of false positive when I know things like, oh, your family, oh, Dorothy, oh, Stonewall, blah, blah, blah. I have those cultural references. People are like, oh, your family. And I'm like, you know. The same thing also happens with politics. People start talking conservative stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, I'm a super hippie liberal that goes to Bernie, man. But when people start talking politics, I'm like, I'm not going to alienate you. So I'm just going to smile and nod when you start talking about, oh my God, immigrants, and oh my God, conservatives, and oh my God, welfare. And I'm like, sure.
Do you feel like you have to take a very specific time for yourself where you can be yourself 100%? I mean, do you feel like in your personal relationships then, you have to be so completely clear that because you have to deal with pretending all the time? I mean, it just feels like I'm super outspoken about my beliefs and things like that and or lack thereof in politics and things. And it's mostly because I'm super candid and it's very hard for me to not just be candid and blunt. It's just how my brain works. And I can't imagine having to be like that all the time. And so, I mean, so when you're like personal time, you know, like, is that just like your friends, you can't abide.
Yeah, I'm very blunt. I'm very straightforward. I'm very kind of authentically myself when I'm off. And I'm very strict about who in my professional world gets to be my friend, because sometimes there's this shocking moment where they're like, oh, I knew you were liberal. I didn't know you ran around naked in the desert.
Right.
That's a different level of, I knew you were, like, ambiguously not really religious. I didn't know you were, like, gonna do a podcast about what being an atheist meant to me.
Yeah.
Are there times where you get uncomfortable when you're interpreting, when it's like you're placed in a situation where you know you're doing your job and you've got your boundaries clearly set, but at the same time it goes in a direction that when people are making assumptions about you that are incorrect?
I mean, I try really hard not to make any interactions about me, because while I'm interpreting, I'm there to facilitate. I'm a conduit. Yeah.
Yeah. You're
and,
not.
And in different interpretation models,
in the best situation, you wouldn't even be there.
Yeah.
Like, they could just communicate directly, that'd be better.
They wouldn't even need me there.
Exactly. So
I'm not going to pretend like I'm not there, because that's naive. Like, my presence changes inherently the interaction and the dynamic and the power. But I'm also not, so I'm going to own that, but I'm also not going to say, like, but, oh, it's so fantastic that I'm here. Let me fix this for you. Let me tell you what he meant to say. Like, you have to strike a balance. So I don't feel like I'm pretending. I really try to be authentic and just be approachable. And it's kind of those soft skills that sometimes you almost feel like people that don't have to intentionally learn them don't have. Like, the ability to have small talk with somebody that you don't actually agree with on a lot of levels is still really fantastic. So I'm glad that I had to learn that.
It's something that I'm capable of doing, and I'm not a fan of. It's surprising how many non-nerdy, fairly conservative, like, super sports fans there are in, like, my brand of IT.
Sure.
That I've historically done, and so, like, I would love it if I could go find a job where I have all these like-minded nerds, but quite frequently I have to, like, fake it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm terrible at faking it, and like not can't. It's to the point where I almost can't. Yeah. Like I can to some degree, but what ends up happening is people. It doesn't last very long because I'm unable to feign interest, and so what ends up happening is someone will say something like, "Oh yeah, you know the ball game, blah blah blah, you know football this," and I'll be like, "I don't watch football."
Yeah.
Or I'll say, "Well, that's nice," and I just can't because I just don't. I mean, it's funny for as much as I. For as good as I am at like improv and how easy it is for me to lie to people I don't know, which it's very easy for me to lie to people I don't know. It just happens sometimes even when I'm not trying. But anybody I actually know or actually like in any capacity, I'm almost incapable of it. It's a weird.
I really don't mind it professionally because I feel like if I'm alienating somebody, then I'm making that situation about me, and my job is inherently not about me, so I just need to get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah.
But in my own time, I'm very protective about getting to be authentic, getting to be myself. And I also do things like, for example, I had a job that was up in northern Minnesota that I was driving, commuting to every single day, and they were super Christian up there, and that was not the purpose of the job, that was just the veneer of what they were trying to do. But I was like, man, I really need a lot more not Jesus in my life right now. I'm going to start listening to these podcasts. I literally, like, I blew through them, and they were great, and then I saw Tim at a party, and I was like, Tim, I need more not Jesus in my life right now. That's what I need.
Thanks, northern Minnesotan Christians.
I do what I can do to balance it, so that's the thing that I
just,
do.
Yeah, it's true neutral, just keep it super balanced.
No, I can understand that. Well, that's the thing, is an interpreter kind of is true neutral in that way because it's
lawful neutral,
flow in, flow out.
lawful neutral.
It's because the truth is I feel that it's because my limited experience with translators mostly was working at Planned Parenthood, and so we had a strict policy, the 1 year abortion counselor, that that meeting that everyone has to go through, we call it a counseling session, which is a misnomer because it's counseling in the way of like you're gonna talk and I'm gonna listen and I'm gonna talk and you're gonna listen and we will have had a counsel, like it's but it's not like, you know, I'm going to therapize you here, but no one else could be in that room. Unless you're a minor, in which case it could be your mother or your guardian, which usually was a woman. But so every now and then we would have a woman whose only translator was her husband.
Ugh.
Or her boyfriend.
Conflict.
Yeah. Super conflict of interest. Awkward. But it's like, I don't have a Farsi translator. Yeah. I can just get over here to help this woman, and she has an abortion today. Like, so that has to happen today. Yep. And so I would say my bits and you know, to her, and then he would say something to her,
and you hope,
and
what
she
said.
Would say something back to him, and he would say, "She says that's fine." And it's like, God,
it didn't
sound
like that fine. It sounded like a lot more worse than
yeah,
that's fine.
Or like I just, and it's so hard because even when it was English to English, I mean, me sitting across from another native English speaker, I would ask questions, and sometimes their answers, I'd be like, "I need you to say it." More this way. I need you to say the words more clearly. You can't just say, "I guess so." You have to say, "Yes, I know. I'm confident. I understand my decision." I need you to say that.
Yeah.
So it's like, God, does she know? I mean, and also it's a husband, and then there's the abuse angle or the controlling angle. Maybe she doesn't want an abortion and he's making her have one. I don't know.
Just
and
all of the ethical issues that come up when you're dealing with anything medical, really. I mean, there's being accurate, but also being compassionate, and I don't know, if as soon as you have any interest in that that's not necessarily altruistic, it becomes an unethical situation.
Yeah. And so what's the hardest translating you do? Like, if you were going to try to find a cat, not in terms of difficulty, but I mean, just what's the... Like, if you had to pick, what's the most difficult, the hardest?
For me, personally, the stuff that I find the worst is, like, tedious, no-point businessies, business meetings. Like, that stuff, I will stab myself before I take those jobs.
Is there a sign for synergy?
very transactional, or...?
What was it, like, within the last month, I had to try to interpret the sign the word planguage. Which is a word, it's a made-up bullshit word that means to put things into plain language.
Yeah, planguage.
And I'm like, what?
It's the most ironic word ever.
Because there's nothing plain about it.
And it's not like you can spell it.
And that was like, on my face and my could not show. Like, in my brain, I'm like, you're awful.
Why can't you just say plain language?
Yeah.
Why can't, then it would be plain language. Instead you say planguage, and it's no longer plain language.
If I have to explain what my planguage word means, like,
then it's,
And then I had to, in combat, I'm like, how do I interpret this while also giving the larger, greater message that this person is an idiot who speaks in buzz talk? Like, you kind of need to know what he's saying, but you really need to know how he's saying it.
Everyone because everyone else in the room is rolling their eyes. Him. Yeah.
Yes.
All the hearing people are going, oh, fuck this guy. Like, it's, so, like, medical stuff, is it, do you end up fingerspelling a lot? I mean, because I imagine with, you know, lots of long, like, medical terms and words or medication names, I mean, diagnoses.
There's tips and tricks you learn when you become an interpreter. You learn the, like, if anybody's over the age of 50, it's like, why don't you just hand them the list of medications? Because I know you've got one in your giant purse. Yes, you do.
Pass
it over. There we go. Everybody knows.
That's great.
But it's important to know, like, this is the name of my medication. Brrr, and I can spell it perfectly versus, it's the blue one. It's, like, this big. I take it morning-ish. That's important for a doctor to know.
Yeah, no, it is. And they can sometimes know, but I mean, I'm thinking, because I mean, if you think of I could think of a bunch of medications where the names are only off by a few letters.
Yeah.
And they're vastly different drugs.
And did they sign a 10 or 100? Because that's different dose. That matters.
And did they understand a 10 or 100? Like, did you, I mean, and not just, That's really cool.
Yeah, interpreting is one of the biggest things I geek out about because it's so fascinating, and this is why I love my job, and this is why I am willing to be extremely neutral and try to put myself to the side to do this work because it's so cool.
I loved the 2 semesters I took of ASL. Like, I loved it, and wanted to keep going with it, but did not have the ability to spend the credits in term because I wasn't getting a major in it, so it was like. But St. Kate's has such a good program,
so
it was so great, and it was so fun. It was one of those few things that I felt so naturally happy about doing, and I don't know if it's just something with the autism being able to, like, use facial expressions that are prescribed almost.
Yes.
Like,
it's like, tell me what to do with my face.
This
Thank
is the
you.
Face you make when you do this sign, and then this is the face you make when you do the other one.
Just
and
give
it's
me
like,
some rules and I will follow them.
It's like,
done.
I got it. And that's when I learned my teacher.
And then the counter to that is, oh, they made that face. I know exactly what that means.
Exactly. That's exactly what that means. Yeah. That's also, I learned the sign for ferret from my professor, which I loved very much, which was, like, just, and I just, I'm sorry, listeners.
That was
Thanks,
great.
Radio.
Yes, you're welcome. It was just so great. It made me laugh.
But it did have that noise,
there's a lot more noises than you might think.
It's a misnomer. Deaf people are not quiet.
Have you translated at Burning Man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's a couple of deaf people that are staff out there that I've met.
Cool.
And in general, they're like, I don't really need you to interpret for me, but we can shoot the shit. Like,
More
frequently
social.
They're like, no, I'm radically self-reliant. But
it's fun.
Yeah,
I mean, it's got to be kind of fun to have a friend.
It's great to talk
chatter
over
with.
Heads.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you instantly have a connection.
Yeah.
Go find someone who's chipping their balls off and have an entire sign language conversation in front of them, and then just be like, "What? Don't you understand? Stand."
Well, you find the person that's chipping hard enough, they think they know sign language.
Oh dear.
Oh yes, you're like,
that, how embarrassing for them.
That happened to me when I got my wisdom teeth out. I was in my sign language class at the time. Not when I got the surgery, but it was during that time period. And so when I woke up, I couldn't talk because my mouth was packed full of gauze. And I was like, oh my God, like, your mouth is full of gauze. So I just started feebly, like, I thought I was signing, but apparently I was just going like just flapping my hands in front of my face. And the nurse is like, I don't know what that is, but it's not sign language and I don't understand it.
It
really freaks out some dentists that people can talk while they're on the chair with their mouths open.
Oh,
so when
man.
I interpret dentist appointments, I always want the ones that are going to get super, like, wigged out.
Yeah.
Because
usually
there's some sort of sadistic thing, like, I'm going to stuff your mouth full of gauze and then ask you that question that's not a yes, no
You're
answer.
You're kind of hostage.
So what did you do today? And then the patient goes, oh, thank you for asking. So first I went to the store. And I'm just like, I had a couple dentists be like, you need to shut up. This is not
the game.
No.
That's
Checkmate.
Funny.
No.
I became a dentist specifically because I don't like small talk.
I'm in control.
No, I talk.
That's
this
amazing.
Is my time.
That's funny. I like that a lot.
The answer to how was your day is specifically And if you don't answer that, then I can't handle it.
Yeah, every once in a while, the only feedback you really get to give them is, like for when something bad just happened. Like,
But then that's my curse because I know sign language, and they're like, so how'd you get? And I'm like,
You should just start signing and then file a complaint that your dentist doesn't know sign language. Be like, you fucking ignorant
you
piece
asked
of shit.
And I answered and you didn't talk.
You didn't even
How
answer
rude.
Me.
How rude.
Yeah, I actually signed that I was assaulted today on the way into this office. You didn't do a thing. You didn't even call the police.
You showed
zero compassion shown at this dentist's office.
Yeah, I said over and over that I am sexually uncomfortable with your hands in my mouth, and you kept going.
Good day,
I said.
On that super dark note,
I get dark. It
five
happens.
Five questions.
Five dark questions.
Tim, do you want to start us out?
Yeah, sure. Question number one, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
I saw What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, it was so good.
The Kiwi guys, right?
The vampire.
Jermaine
Clement.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen yet.
You gotta see it, Tim.
I know, I want to see it.
It's on Netflix.
I just haven't seen it yet.
The guy that plays their band manager in Flight of the Conchords, who is the leader of the werewolf pack, that guy is like the most hopelessly... the least threatening man on earth.
Yeah.
Like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's so nice and polite. And
like, every time he ever tries to assert himself or, like, be, like, the alpha, in anything I've seen him, it's always just like, oh, dude. Like, he just gets smacked down, and then to see him the leader of a werewolf pack was...
We're werewolves, not swearwolves.
All that shit, yeah. That was fantastic. I like that quite a bit.
Yes. Question number two. Who is your favorite atheist character?
I came prepared for this. I just... Hey. Read a book series by Tanya Huff, and they are basically space marines, and I was like, I don't like science fiction, but it's just it's an excuse to talk about space elves and all
that
stuff. The main character, these are the Valor series, she is, I couldn't find anywhere in the book that she explicitly said that she was an atheist, but I really appreciated her philosophy. Every time a problem came up, she was like, let's look at all of the actual possible causes of this.
Facts.
And let's look at the science, and let's look at and they throw her into these increasingly more ludicrous, like, existential, this couldn't
mystical.
Possibly be coincidence kind of things, and every single time she's like, okay, it's super not religion.
Sherlock Holmes, like,
well, we know it's not God, so check. All right, now the next thing.
And she's like, and yet... It's these coincidences are too coincidental. Like, her motto starts to become, I don't believe in coincidences. What's the connection? Because there's got to be a reason why all these bullshit things are happening that are connected. So I just really appreciate that for her. It never occurs to be like, oh, maybe God, because nailed it.
But yet she doesn't believe in coincidences, which I love. Like, I don't believe in coincidences. There is a connection. It's just not supernatural.
I just don't have it yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to find it. I'm
going
to do a science. I'm going to figure it out. The author is Tanya Huff.
Oh, you said that right, yeah.
What is the character's name? Torin Kerr. She's a gunny sergeant, and also, what is also interesting is she is responsible for managing three different species that are all kind of the foot soldiers of this confederation.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. And they all have their own religion and beliefs and cultural differences, and the author does a very good job of making them seem alien. Like, one race is extremely sexual, and she's not just, like, her about it. She tries to respect their cultural needs as... by our standards, hypersexual creatures. One of them are kind of basically the lizard men, and they have weird things and hang-ups about eating and food. And so she's not disrespectful to anybody's cultural. She's just working with them to be effective and get what she needs. And in fact, she avoids a fight that would potentially have killed somebody because she takes advantage of knowing that he's religious. She's pretty much like, I'm going to use this against you. I look at you. I know what part of that planet you're from. I know that planet section is deeply religious. I'm going to try to use your religion against you. I'm going to position myself for you to think that I am holy, and then you won't attack me, and then I don't have to kick your ass and probably kill you. So
I have to say, the back of this book has my favorite ever, like, sci-fi thing that happens, which is, but everyone knew the others never took prisoners. Or did they? It's such a, like, I've read a few books lately where, like, the synopsis is, but that's not what happens, or was it? It's like, maybe it was, I guess, then. It seems like the kind of thing that was.
Have you heard of the Uplift series of books?
No. Those are great.
It's, future, you know, human space travel. We've uplifted or given sentience to a few different races of animals as we've gone into the stars, and one of them is the dolphins, who are pretty great at spacefare because they're naturally think well in a 3D environment. It's the whole Mon Calamari thing. Mm-hmm. But the sentient dolphins are also kind of like horny, randy assholes.
Super polyamorous. Like, they don't see anything wrong with just in a three-way with two humans and a dolphin.
They speak in song and poem because that's how they sing underwater when they're dolphins. And so they like, sing little limericks about, like, screwing women and stuff like that. Like, they're just filthy.
They're funny.
Yeah,
and the female scientist is like, "Got all right." Like,
I've had enough of you horny dolphins.
Yeah, you damn horny dolphins. Like, I said no. I've been saying no every day.
Like, yeah. Yeah, they're a little harassy.
Yeah.
Question number three. What is your geekiest hobby?
Probably gaming, and recently Spelunky. I don't know if you've
played. Oh, yeah.
No, Spelunky.
I literally cosplayed a Spelunky character with a bunch of us at Convergence last year.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Is it Lori and Seth?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I was the jaguar-headed fellow.
It's awesome.
Fellow.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't call it a roguelike, but it is a procedurally generated, side-scrolling, dungeon-crawling,
8-bit style.
Yeah.
16-bit.
16, sorry, 16-bit.
Jeez, Tim.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's a big difference. I mean, it's Super Nintendo or Nintendo, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's and there's inventory and money, and it's hard as fuck.
It's really satisfying because you can't just memorize the twitch reflex muscles to do the same level every time because it generates new each time. But there are certain things, like you're always going to have some of these monsters on this level. You always have these monsters on that level. There's always a progression of how the dungeons happen. There's three in this world and three in this world and three in this world. And it's,
ice worlds are always kind of built like this.
Yeah. You
know? Is that the game we played at the Massacre for High Charity?
No, that's La Mulana.
Okay.
It's very similar to that,
though.
Okay. Have you played FTL? Do you play FTL?
No, I've watched people play that. I have a limited capacity of how many fingers I want to twitch at the same time.
Sure, sure. Yeah. FTL, the thing about that is pause. You can pause at any time and do all your actions and instructions and then unpause and then pause right away.
Yeah, yeah.
It just is also a procedurally generated, low graphics, high fun, cheap indie developer game.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right, question number four. What is your favorite sandwich?
There was a deli called Rye over on Lindale.
Oh. I never got to go.
Pretty much every sandwich they made there, because they were, like, fabulous and queer, and they had signs that said, like, "Yeah, sure, you betcha." Yeah. Like, they're, like, Minnesota Jewish.
It was like a...
And they made their own bread. They made their own pastrami. They made their own corned beef. They made horseradish from scratch. Magic and rainbows in your face. I had a job for like 2 months, and
just shoved the magic in your face.
Every single day there for 2 months, and I was like, I'm never sick of this.
Only it wasn't magic. I mean, we gotta be clear. It was
18th and Happen or something like that?
Yeah,
like right by the liquor store?
Right off Franklin.
Basically.
But it's gone now, so...
It's gone now.
Sorry. You can't eat there.
No sandwiches.
They were amazing.
Question number five. What's the stupidest thing anyone has ever said to you about being an atheist or atheism in general?
It's really probably just that really awkward, pitying stare they give you when they realize that you're not one of them. It's like,
oh, you're going to hell.
Yeah, that.
Oh. Or you don't celebrate Easter. Oh,
what do you do for Easter then? Like,
we hide Easter eggs
you just
with candy
home?
In them.
But we don't do anything. You just don't do anything.
And then we don't go to church. It's the greatest thing ever.
We complain that the grocery stores are closed because we can't go do our grocery shopping.
But how do you enjoy an Easter basket and candy and a chocolate bunny and enjoying company with your friends and a good meal without the veneer of Jesus over
you? Yeah, how are you enjoying
all
this?
I'm really happy that my savior didn't get killed.
How can you eat au gratin potatoes when you're not also simultaneously celebrating a corpse magically ascending into the sky physically?
No. Oh, that happens 40 days later. The ascension is 40 days after the resurrection.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, what happens with, where does he go?
He walks
he
around and meets with his disciples and he preaches.
Is that when he was supposed to have gone by it through America, or is that on the way?
Because
like the Mormons think that he had a stop off in the Americas. The fan fic.
Apparently there's some sort of
maybe that was while he was with the devil
too,
in the desert
like 40
for 40 days.
Oh,
I don't know. But I do know that 40 is a big thing in the Bible.
The 40
it's like
days
Solomon,
is the Lent.
Solomon
for.
Sat for 40. Solomon was king for 40 years. 40 is really big.
40 yeah. days in the desert.
You know,
or whatever.
Did you know that's as many as 4 tens?
And that's terrible.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Somebody explain it to me somehow. Anyway, the point is, resurrection is 3 days after
right.
he's crucified, and the ascension is 40
so
days.
So you don't celebrate
sense.
Any of that?
Oh, I celebrate the heck out of it.
Non-religiously.
Secular, yeah.
I'm a pitying stare with my voice.
Yeah, it's that...
When you get presents on Christmas, do they not mean as much because Jesus wasn't born for your sins?
You must be so sad that people that you know have died and they're just gone. Oh, my people are gone. Yours are gone too, just so you know.
Just
spoilers.
Gone.
Yes. Spoilers. Everyone's dead.
Literally.
Oh. And on that note, Claire, thank you so much for
Yay.
Being our guest today and talking with us, enlightening us a bit. We are Geeks Without God. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We don't have anything we're promoting right now. That's awesome.
No,
I just was thinking
not
about
really.
It.
Jim Bandage is coming up. Go watch that
yeah.
show.
Yeah. We'll be
I'll
at Convergence.
Later.
Yeah, we'll be at Convergence. Yeah, we'll be
oh,
celebrating
shit.
Our third
all
anniversary at Convergence.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we might have some fun stuff for that. So
yeah.
yeah.
Otherwise, see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
How do you sign cunt?
I don't know. How?
With a pen.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
We just want everybody to know that we were once 12.